I awoke to the sound of running water. A shower. Was Bob in the shower? Then I remembered where I was and that Bob had been missing for about 2 weeks. It wasn't Bob in the shower. It was Daniel. A new wave of uncertainty swept over me as I remembered all the events leading up to the present moment. I would ask Daniel if I could borrow his phone to call Cookie today, and if I could call and check in on Uncle Fawcett, even though it had only been 3 days since I had seen him. The water stopped, and I heard Daniel in there moving around. Maybe he was shaving. Then the doorknob turned. I pretended to still be asleep. Peeping through my half-closed eyelids, I saw him stick his head out of the bathroom to see if I was asleep or not. Satisfied that I was, he came out wearing nothing but a towel. Yep, he definitely worked out. I had seen him shirtless before, but now, in this morning light, with water glistening on his wet skin, it was obvious he took care of his body. It came like an unexpected hunger pang, but a surge went through the mid-lower portion of my body, a physical ache and longing so strong that I broke out in a sweat. I closed my eyes tighter so that I couldn't see him anymore. I couldn't believe what had just happened to me, and I was so ashamed of myself. I thought of Bob and prayed in my head to be forgiven for being caught off guard in such a way. I heard the bathroom door close. Then a bit later, I heard the outside door open and close. Daniel had left the room. I wasn't sure where he had gone. Maybe to get more ice. Maybe to find something to eat. At any rate, I seized the opportunity to claim the bathroom. Took a shower, then donned shorts, t-shirt, flip-flops, and put my hair in a ponytail. I had just come out when Daniel returned to the room with a white bag and a drink holder with 2 cups of coffee. He handed me an egg biscuit and a cup of coffee. "You're starting to look awful skinny to me," he said. "Hope you like it. It's all I can find in this little town." "It's fine, thanks," I said. He took a pencil out of his pocket and his little notebook. He started jotting something down. "What are you working on?" I asked. "Making a list," he said. "A list? Of what?" "Of pieces to this Bob puzzle." "Do you always make lists?" He paused for a second, shifted his eyes as if shifting gears in mid-thought. "Yeah, I guess I do." Then he went back to writing. "Are you sure you're not gay?" "Stop asking me that." "Men don't make lists," I said. "Some men do." I didn't get him. On the one hand, he was all spontaneous, like the way he pretended to be an entertainer and played it through to the letter on a moment's notice. On the other hand, he made lists and plans. "You're quirky," I said. He laughed. "My, my, aren't we the pot calling the kettle black?" After breakfast, we checked out of the motel and headed back toward the area southwest of Mercy. Back to the place where we had encountered Morgan. Once again, we went 10 miles down a lane, past a pig farm and a junkyard, then down a narrow gravel road, past a spot where an oak tree had been struck by lightning, until we came to a log house behind a chain-link fence and in front of a high wooden fence. Bob blew the horn, as before, but Morgan did not come out. His dogs did not come out. So, Daniel took his pistol from the glove box, stuffed it in the back of his jeans, and together we went up on the porch. He tried the doorknob, and the door opened. I thought about telling him that he didn't have a warrant, but he looked at me and put his finger to his lips, signaling for me not to say a word. He went in first and scanned the room, then motioned for me to follow. Inside, we found nothing, not a stitch of furniture, not a tool, not even a scrap of paper. It was as if the building had never been inhabited in any capacity. We spent 2 hours searching the woods behind Morgan's place, but to no avail. There wasn't a clue in the world as to where he had gone or why. We did come upon a trash pile about a quarter of a mile behind the house. Daniel went to combing through it like a junk dealer looking for metal to sell. He picked up soup cans and examined them, and then he found something, a scrap of paper, a receipt from where a country store that we had passed on the way here. He stood. "I've got an idea. Let's go." We drove to the store, one of those brown aluminum buildings with two gas pumps and a pop machine outside. Daniel got out and pumped some gas and then said, "Come in with me, Razzie." Inside, two men, both looked to be about 60, sat at a table near the window. A dusty-haired girl in her 20s made sandwiches behind the counter. Daniel went over to the cooler and took out two bottles of water. He gave me one of them. Then he approached the girl. "Got gas," he said, "and these waters." He paid the girl, then walked over to the men. "Howdy, fellas. Nice day out, ain't it?" "Awful hot and humid," one of them said. "Well, you reckon the fish are a-biting?" Daniel said. "Nah," one of the men said. "It's too hot for the fish to bite. Went over to the Cumberland yesterday. Not a bite all day. Nah, them fish ain't a-biting. They're hiding under the rocks in the heat." Daniel took a drink of water and flashed them a warm smile. He had a way of disarming people. Within seconds, the three of them were shooting the breeze, as he called it, talking like they had known each other all their lives, not in a hurry for anything. After several minutes of what I considered nonsense, he up and said, "Say, y'all wouldn't know who owns that old place down there past that tree that got struck by lightning a few years back, would you?" "No, can't say that I do. Why are you asking, if you don't mind my prying?" Daniel put his arm around me. Me and my girl here, we're looking for a place to buy, you know, where I can turn out a few head of cattle and let my coon dogs run. Ain't that right, baby?" "Baby? He could call me baby in front of complete strangers, but he couldn't call me cupcake?" "That's right, sugar," I said.
"Yeah, be a good place for that," the man replied.
"How about you, Elmer? You know that guy that bought that old place?" Elmer shook his head. "Oh, I don't know the feller's name, but he comes in here from time to time. He's real peculiar like, too. Ain't he, Taz?" Taz said. "He's an odd bird, all right. Don't recollect his name, though."
"I know his name," the girl behind the counter said. "His name is Lyle."
"The last name?" Daniel asked.
"He never gives it," she said. "Pays for everything in cash. Usually shows up with another old guy, Morgan or something like that."
"Lyle, you say?" I asked.
"Yep, that's his name. I ought to know. Comes in here about once a month and asks me out every time." She blew a bubble. "And every time I tell him to go get a woman his own age."
"When was the last time he was in here?" Daniel asked.
"Ma, maybe a week, though. 10 days at the most."
Daniel picked up a napkin from the table, then looked at me. "You got a pen in that ginormous pocketbook of yourn, darling?" I dug around in my purse and handed him a pen.
"There you go, muffin," I said. He winked at me.
I had meant it as an insult, but Daniel loved it. I rolled my eyes at him. Then he grinned. He wrote his phone number on the napkin and gave it to the girl. "If he comes back in here, would you call me? I really am interested in that property." She took the napkin and stuck it on a bulletin board behind the counter. "If I can think of it, I will."
"See that boy's face? All them scratches," Elmer said to Taz as we were going out the door. "Looks like they done had a lover's quarrel."
"Yeah, and she won," Taz said. I don't know if they couldn't tell that we could hear them or they didn't care. When we got in the truck, Daniel sat there a minute, drumming his fingers on the steering wheel. I knew something was brewing in his brain. I'd been with him long enough to recognize when he was having a brainstorm.
"What's up, muffin?" I asked.
He looked over at me and grinned. "Got me an idea, sugar. We're going to the courthouse." We spent the entire afternoon in the courthouse, looking through public records of land transactions from the past 20 years for the county. We were searching for any records bearing the name of Lyle, whether it was a first name or a last name. At a quarter to four, 15 minutes before closing time, Daniel said, "I found it." I left the record book I was looking through and went over to him. "Look here. In 1985, one Lyle Betterman bought the tract of land below the pig farm, which stretches from the corner where an iron post was driven into the ground beside a massive oak." "Which was struck by lightning," I added.
"Yep."
He whipped out his phone and took a picture of the document, then sent a text to someone. "Come on," he said. "Where are we going?"
"Back out there, back to Lyle's place."
"Why?" "Looking for clues." "But we already did that, and all we found was that receipt."
"We're missing something. I know it."
So we drove back out there again. Daniel blew again, and no one answered. We got out and went through the house again. Then we went through the woods again, and Daniel combed through the junk pile again. Afterwards, we went out front and walked all the way up to where the old tree was, and then back down to the front of the cabin. It was near dark when Daniel said, "Let's walk along the chain link fence." So we did. His phone rang and he answered. Then he made another call. I couldn't hear what he was saying. He was up ahead of me. As he hung up, he walked back toward me. "That was John, the deputy I called earlier. So far he's found nothing, but he will go at it again tomorrow. Got more pressing matters right now." "You sure do depend on that phone a lot," I said.
"Yes, I do," he admitted.
"I always wanted a cell phone, but Bob was strongly opposed to it. He swore he'd smash it if I got one. He said the government can track you with a phone."
"That's true. But if you're not up to anything illegal, then why should you fear? It's only those who hide that are suspected of having something to hide. Their constant desire to be off the radar is what draws attention to them."
"Is that what you think happened to Bob? Maybe he just decided to drop off the radar?"
"That's what we're trying to find out, isn't it?"
"This phone is how I keep in touch with my family," he said.
"You have a family?"
"Sure I do. Baby brother lives in Nashville. Call him several times a month. Got cousins I'm close to. Got a couple of aunts and uncles. One of them is Aunt Elaine. She's like a second mom to me. So sure, I've got family and friends, too."
"What's that like?"
"It's great. Of course, nothing replaces your best friend." I knew he was talking about Marion.
"How on earth did you manage to stay close to them all?" I asked.
"Excuse me, what?"
"You know, before Marion's accident."
"I still don't know what you mean," he said. "I called them then just like I do now. I went to see them whenever the notion struck me. I took Marion with me."
"What kind of question is that, anyway?"
"Apparently a dumb one," I said. I stopped and traced a diamond shape in one of the fence links. I could tell he was standing there staring at me. I glanced sideways and saw his boots still pointed in my direction. He moved around, half turning, and then back again.
"You know," he said, "not every spouse out there is controlling and domineering."
"What's that supposed to mean?" I asked.
"Well, for one thing, if my wife wanted a cell phone and she had the money, she would have bought one, and I would have kept my mouth shut. And if she wanted a perm or go on a trip, whatever, if we could afford it, and she did it. I mean, sure, she always discussed things with me, but..."
"But you're saying Bob controlled me."
"Here's what I'm saying. I think you married young, really young. 16, 17. I think maybe you had never been with another man before."
"Well, that's none of your business."
Even I was surprised at the sharpness of my tone.
"You're always making fun of me and of my life. Am I some private variety act for you?"
"Is that what you think?" he said.
"No."
God, no. Then what? Just hear me out, he said. And try not to get mad at me. You told me that you were teased your whole life for kids at school. I know that you took care of your sisters, your sick father, as a teen. I know that your mother suffered from mental illness that contributed to her untimely death, and that prior to that episode, you cared for her and for Cookie, who also suffers from illnesses and depression. I know that your ailing uncle moved back here and that you felt responsible to look after him. And then, there's Bob. I leaned my head against the fence. What about Bob? Because you spent so much time caring for your family, you felt you were neglecting your wifely duties to him. And over the course of the years, you let him dictate every aspect of your life, even down to the food you ate and the clothes you wore. You let him spend money on anything he wanted. He had a beautiful motorcycle while you drove a truck that has one cylinder away from a junkyard, and you didn't stand up for yourself. Why? You don't understand. Yes, I do, he said. Don't tell me that. When you love somebody, you'll start doing all sorts of strange things. I know that. But what you allowed Bob to do for you for all of these years has not been out of love or even respect. Shut up, I told him. Just shut up. Just hear me out, he said, and try not to get mad at me. You told me that you were teased your whole life for kids at school. I know that you took care of your sick father as a teen. I know that your mother suffered from mental illness that contributed to her untimely death, and that prior to that episode, you cared for her and for Cookie, who also suffers from illnesses and depression. I know that your ailing uncle moved back here, and then you felt it was your responsibility to look after him, too. And then, there's Bob. I lean my head against the fence. What about Bob? Because you spent so much time caring for your family, you felt you were neglecting your wifely duties to him. And over the course of the years, you let him dictate every aspect of your life, even down to the food you ate and the clothes you wore. You let him spend money on anything he wanted. He had a beautiful motorcycle while you drove a truck that's one cylinder away from a junkyard, and you didn't stand up for yourself. Why? You don't understand. Yes, I do, he said. Don't tell me that when you love somebody, you'll start doing all sorts of strange things. I know that. But what you allowed Bob to do to you for all of these years was not out of love or even respect. Shut up, I told him. Just shut up. It was out of guilt, he continued. You shut people out of your life. You put up with the detestable name and walk through the world with your head down because somehow you think you don't deserve any better. You're wrong, I said. Am I? You've got a good heart. You're an incredible and beautiful person inside and out. But you've spent your life taking care of people and defending your family from the cruel world outside. You've done it so long that you've become a prisoner to the needs of everybody around you. You worry about how your actions affects everybody's life except your own. You've only got one life, Razzie. We were quiet for a moment. I stood there letting his words sink into my mind, into my heart. He had torn my life apart, peeled away at me a layer at a time, like I was an onion or something. Then, something sprang up inside of me. Maybe it was anger. Maybe it was courage. But I was bound and determined to show him that he didn't know as much as he thought he did. He started walking again, so I raised my voice. And who's going to free me, Daniel Ransom? You? He stopped walking and stood with his back to me. You can't even free yourself. You talk to me about being imprisoned by the burdens of other people. I know you took care of a sick mother. I know your whole life revolves around Marion. How are you any different? Is it really me you want to free, Daniel, or is it yourself? It's different and you know it, he said. Is it? I moved toward him a little bit so he could hear me better. You know what I think? I think that you want to quote Free me, because it makes you feel better about yourself. It's you that's imprisoned. It's you that's living a life based on guilt. He looked over his shoulder at me. Don't say that. Don't ever say that again. Then he went back to the truck. I followed. He drove us to the grocery store and went into the deli and ordered us some sandwiches. We ate in his truck that night. He spoke no more than necessary words like, what kind of sandwich do you want? Then, instead of going back to Mercy, he drove into the town of Manchester, Kentucky. It was about 10 o'clock when we got there. He rented us a small room at a motel. Our room had two beds this time. I had already figured out that while Daniel lived comfortably, he was not abundantly wealthy, and he watched how he spent, like he watched how he ate, despite the fact that he loved donuts, ice creams, and pancakes. After we carried our bags in, he went outside for a walk. We had walked miles already that afternoon, and it had been hot. Yet, he wanted to walk again, after dark. I stayed in our room and watched television, but I paid little attention to the sitcom that was airing. I was too worried about Daniel. I sat next to the window and kept looking out to see if I could see him. Sure, he was physically fit, but that hadn't stopped the pirate guy from busting his nose, and it wouldn't stop bullets if some sort of crazy night stalker happened to be out there. So every few minutes I looked for him, and after about an hour I saw him sitting on the curb outside our door. He was leaned against the support posts looking at the sky. My words had cut Daniel Ransom far deeper than that guy's ring from the bar. I watched him for a few minutes, and I felt compassion for him. I wanted to make everything in his life okay again, take away the last 7 years of pain and loneliness that he had endured. I wanted to have him tease me until he made me mad, or call me Razzie Jane. I took a deep breath, then slipped out the door and sat down beside him. Hey, Sheriff, you all right? Look, he pointed toward the streetlight. You can't even see the Big Dipper when you're in a town. All these lights make it impossible to really see the sky. It's only a little town. Still, I miss the stars. I can draw some. So, he said, you an artist? I didn't say that they'd be recognizable. You're right, he said. Well, you don't have to agree so fast. You haven't even seen my work yet. No, I mean what you said earlier. You're right about me. No, Daniel, I wasn't. I was mad at you. She never would have stepped off that curb if I hadn't been running late. I was supposed to be there for her, and I wasn't. He still wasn't looking at me. His eyes remained fixed on the stars he couldn't see. She wouldn't have... It wasn't your fault, I said. I laid my hand on his arm. Daniel Ransom, you're a good man. No, I'm not a good man, he said. I'm just an average man, foolishly trying to do something good that will take away the pain of a single mistake. So what are we going to do about it? He dropped his head and looked down now. Kiss and make up, I guess. He must have heard me gasp. Not literally. Because, you know, I might turn into a frog or something. He was joking again. Good. Or was that the way Daniel worked? He had any hurt in his heart with a joke. I couldn't judge him. Because, after all, hadn't I always been guilty of the same thing? His cut on his cheek was swollen and filled with pus. I reached out and touched his face. He flinched. Found a first aid kit in your truck. Come on, let's go inside and let me put some antibiotics on your face. Inside, he sat on the edge of the bed while I cleaned his cut. Ouch, he yelped when I tried to work the pus out of the wound. Stop that. You big baby, I said. You've got an infection. You face outlaws, but you're chicken of a little medicine. Some sheriff you must be. I bent my head over him to put some peroxide on his cut. He unexpectedly turned to face me, and I quickly placed my mouth so close to him that I could feel his breath on my lips. If you hurt me again,
he whispered. I'm going to arrest you. I froze and our eyes locked. My heart was beating so hard that I could feel it in my ears. You've got to be still, I whispered. He swallowed and said, well, you keep mashing on my face. He stroked my face with the back of his hand. Sweat trickled down my back. I swabbed his cut. From now on, you're going to have to take better care of your face, or else you'll end up looking like that old guy that did this to you. Well, in that case, we better stay out of bars and other places where horny old guys make passes at pretty girls. He stroked my hair. His touch brought those same yearnings that I had felt earlier. Then he said, Rezzy, I need to take a cold shower right now. He jumped up, pushed past me, and darted into the bathroom. Oh my gosh, I said to myself after he had gone. Oh my gosh. My body was having all sorts of reactions. I was horrible, so horrible. What had just happened to us? That could not happen again. It just could not. We were traumatized and exhausted. That was it. It had been a long day. I climbed in my bed and covered up. When he came back out, I pretended to be asleep. All I could think of was that that could not happen again. We could not, would not be in such close proximity ever again. I would find Bob and take him home, and my life would go back to the way it had always been, and Daniel would go back to work. He would drop in to see Marion several times a week, and he would read her stories and bring her toys, and he would go home to his apartment at nights, where he could be alone until he was an old man, because he loved her and he would never even kiss another woman. But I had wanted him to kiss me. I had wanted to feel his arms around me. I was a terrible person.